plagued a potential nugget.
Moving to a different theme, Karthik, again, back to the point about the pace of growth of companies in early years, and typically a lot of the entrepreneurs being quite young in terms of the experiences, life experiences, business experiences they've been through. What are some of the what have you seen in terms of good practice for entrepreneurs to scale up their leadership capability as the organization scales up? What do good entrepreneurs do?
I think they inevitably take a year or two, but the best entrepreneurs start sharpening their, you know, we used to joke about it in business school, vision, what is vision, what is mission? It's almost disastrous if you don't have it in a startup. It's counterintuitive, actually. The startup needs it more than the big organization. The big organization reflects it in the scale to which it's already been built.
And there's a certain momentum that takes it there, right?
Yeah. You go and find some part of, let's say, my last day job was the Times of India, right?
Right.
You go and interview 10 people, you figure out the vision for yourself.
It's distributed enough in the organization, yeah.
It's there, right? It might not be perfect, but it'll be a 5 on 10 to 8 on 10 with everyone.
True.
In a startup, you don't define that. It can be 1 to 10. The founder thinks he gets all of it. Somebody down the line doesn't know. So one ability to articulate that, define that, and goes back to purpose. What are you solving? What are you building? Because to me, that attracts the best talent, that attracts the most missionary of team members, and eventually the leadership that you might want for your company, right? If they're not married to the idea and you're trying to hire them in, you better be at like a few $100 million of value. Somebody's coming for a job again.
Interesting.
Right? And so I've found that the best founders actually are able to win the best people from the market basis this, not simply throwing money.
Vision and purpose.
Which if you had thrown money, then you fall into these traps of having built random organizations at random scale. I would not random organize, random scale too rapidly without having any emotional connect with what you're building. So at first drop of some situation, whether it's funding or whatever, all of them are out of the door. It's a hunting for guys. Like, that's what I'm saying. If you are seeing, there might be, I'm coming up with empirical things on the fly, but it's like, if you're coming up with a need to negotiate everybody's salary down by 20%, 8 out of 10 times, it's probably a problem. Right. That means it's coming for the salary. It's not coming for what you're selling. And I think the best leaders I have seen have built on that former premise, having this in place. And, you know, we, again, all things which we, again, HR courses we used to laugh about, culture setting, it can go so wrong so quick, it's not funny.
True.
Because the organization is being, it's a baby, right? It's like teaching cuss words to a child. It can go very wrong. Right? And so it's so fragile in that sense that if the leaders are not working around fixing that very early, sometimes you're not capable. You may be not confrontational. So you don't talk about it.
And actually, just building on that, are they at a point in time in life and maturity to understand the nuances? Back to your point about no substitute to experience.
Absolutely. No, you're right. And right in that. So some of them get it intuitively. That's why I think the best founders are the best founders. Because they just get it. Others seek help. Others don't. And don't get it. And so that's your matrix, right? The disaster waiting to happen, right? They should ask. And honestly, we didn't realize that might be the biggest ask, or that box could be the biggest ask of us, right? In the various things that people can ask. And you don't know how to offer. You can't go there and start coaching them on this. It's got to be intuitive.
Sure.
So one, you're trying to gauge it at selection.
Right.
And then you're hoping that this person acknowledges who he's got on board and knows how to ask. Which is why, for example, I feel a lot of angels to me are very disappointing. Because they think it's about cutting the 10, 15 lakh check. It has nothing to do with that. It's about all of this. If you're not there for that person, you're effectively taking a blind punt on the fact that they will figure this out.
Correct.
Entirely on their own. And so the other interesting aspect is, which I think is a good predictor of this in the long term. We need to organize our data so that we can actually predict this with some probability. So who referred this person?
Mm.
So who do they look for mentorship? Who are they connected to?
Very interesting.
Who has judged them enough that he thinks it's worthy enough to risk their goodwill to pass on the lead to me?
That's curation, right? Absolutely.
All sorts of behavioral curation has already happened, no?
Correct, correct.
So you just take that cue and run with it. That's exactly what we're doing in one case now. A lead came through one founder. I think he's too emotional, so he wouldn't apply a different lens. We put him on another founder. Both founders we respect and love a lot. Both are Fund One founders. Both gave a thumbs up. We'll finally do the deal.
It's very interesting. If I were to sort of use my, one of the things that, who's now Rajiv, who's now the global CEO of Egon Center, he was a partner in Delhi. He would always say, when you source a leader through another referral whom you trust, who's an accomplished leader and a trusted leader, that always carries higher weightage, and you can pound the table with a lot more conviction.
Absolutely.
Than somebody that you pick up from LinkedIn. Just to sort of give you the other extreme.
We get 3,000 pipeline, right?
Right.
Probably 750 to 1,000 are referred.
Right.
Now, within that, there is some 10 grades of reference.
Correct.
A banker who met you at a conference also refers. Your founder refers. Your LP refers. Your friend refers.
Correct.
Everything is a different quality of reference.
Very true.
And if you're able to eventually build a... And so people say... I wrote this in my blog and said, unfortunately, you have to come to us referred to have a decent probability of even getting heard. That's a pipeline. It's not like I don't want to help you, but I want to say this up front.
That's why Wharton has letters of recommendation, right? I mean, everybody can write a CV. I mean, it's you need some market validation.
Absolutely. Right? And so in these cases, it's all about that.
Hmm.
There, whatever said and done, you can't, unless the guy is a criminal or something, he comes to us 2 years and goes away.
Actually,
yeah. Here you're putting millions of dollars behind this person.
There's lesser of a pinch.
There is a bigger bet. He's paying, at least. Yeah, you're paying for that learning.
That's true.
So you better get it right as early as possible.
Got it.
The key takeaway for me here is that as one is building out an organization, it makes immense sense to reflect hard and put a language to the culture you want to build, and keep that front and center of everything you do. Recruiting, performance management, promotion, and so on. The example that comes to mind is J&J, which has a credo that was articulated way back in 1943, about 75 years back. It is a concise one-page document, which talks about how they are accountable to the medical community, to the families, employees, communities, and shareholders in that order. And if they did this, they would make good sustainable returns over the long run. What is more fascinating is that this has permeated various parts of the organization across geographies and businesses and across time. In a young organization, the risk of divergence is so high when you have 10, 20, 50 people if they aren't aligned on the culture. Thank you for listening. For more, please visit playtopotential.com.